DW Africa Link.
Northern Ghana has long carried the weight of conflict, from chieftaincy disputes in Bwaku to the growing threat of extremist violence spilling across porous borders. But even in the face of fear and uncertainty, many Ghanaians are choosing hope through grassroots dialogue, community vigilance, and calls for stronger government action. So the question is, can Ghana transform its fragile north into a model of peace and resilience, or will unresolved tensions keep it teetering on the edge? That is what we are exploring today, together. My name is George Okachi, and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Now, just the other day, I was catching up with a friend I first met over a drink in Ghana, and we started talking about Burkina Faso. But the conversation quickly turned to northern Ghana. What stayed with me was his description of the creeping fear, women watching their husbands taken away, then these women fleeing with their children to escape violence. Today, northern Ghana stands at a crossroads, but it's also a place of strength where communities are pushing back against fear and demanding peace. To help us unpack the risks and the resilience, I'm joined by DW's Maxwell Souk, reporting from Tamale in northern Ghana, and Professor Felix Longi, conflict researcher and senior lecturer at the University for Development Studies in northern Ghana. But first, let's hear from the people living through these challenges. Here are some of the voices of the people Maxwell has been speaking to on the ground.
I lose a lot. Because as at the time it started, we were not prepared. Like, we didn't pick anything. That's what I mean. We didn't take anything. So when the house, when it started, so we have to run. We did not take anything. So all our property got destroyed, and our rooms, everything. As you can see, we did not pick anything from the houses. We ran to the neighbor villages. We did not come.
How then did you get clothing?
For clothing, our relatives gave us some, and some too supported us from the high places. They supported us with some clothes. And we also get some from the market, like Langomi and the small things. We also get from that place. We can't farm here because the dispute have not been settled. So if it has settled, we can come back and farm. But since it has not been settled, we have to stay far places, so that when the dispute have been solved, then we can come back. But for this year, we don't think it will be possible.
Around here, there are pockets of conflict. Down there in the stream, people cannot even live there. Police are being stationed here and all that. It means that there's an elusive peace. If government is silent on this, then that speaks so much to the fact that you want to leave them to their fate. This is what some of them are saying. You are a representative. Yeah. What do you say?
What you are saying is very true. Even passing through that place to maybe when you are traveling to Bunkulubu or passing around that area, whether in the night or daytime, you feel panic because over there, no one lives there. When you are passing, you don't know as and when they will meet you and say you are a target. And because no one lives there, it's good. They work and bring peace so that the people come back there to stay and we live like before.
Chief, my question is, has the police made attempt to invite them to sit on a table to discuss solutions?
No, it is not this police that will invite them. Somebody you are already conflicting with, then we need a tender to come in and bring the two of us together. If I invite them here, they will not come. In the same way, they can't invite me to go there. Somebody else needs to come in and then bring us together.
Max, I really appreciate how you framed that last point, looking not just at the problems, but at the possibilities. So tell us, what's the situation like right now in Bwaku and other hotspots? And just as importantly, where are you seeing signs of hope?
What is happening is that there is government detailing military. So the military took over the town and there is patrol, especially during curfew hours. That said, the exigencies in which this deployment was made are still there. The conflict that is still unresolved, the fact that movement there is quite difficult for both parties and, you know, for everybody, including whether you are part of the conflict or not, you need to be cautious. Even me as a journalist, when I'm planning my trip there, I need to be very cautious in going. And any other person, trade has been affected. People, livelihood, farmers cannot farm. And then it's quite difficult for people to find even food. Bwaku is a big town. So there's a complete embargo in trade, in other things. Likewise, many conflicts, communities like, you know, in the Nampanduru area, where others, the nature are different, but, you know, the effects is the same.
So, Max, you're trying to say that there are no signs of hope or opportunities to de-escalate?
Well, the possibility of what the country is now looking at is a mediation effort that in terms of, for Bwaku, for instance, there's a mediation process that's being handled by Otun 4 or 82. Then that is what the government is hoping on for this mediation. But apart from that, there's nothing on the ground. And what is on the ground is the fact that there's military. The military being stationed there is not to, you know, dissolve the conflict or to solve the problem, but just to ensure that lives and property are safe.
Prof Longi, based on what Maxwell has described, what are the underlying grievances that need to be addressed if there is to be lasting peace?
The underlying issues are historical in nature and they emanate from disagreements over who should become the Bukunaba, and Bukunaba is a title, Polish position of the overlord of Bwaku. And if you, I'm sure you will know that Bwaku is in the extreme end of the northeastern corner of Ghana, if you know the map, and it lies where it is. It is also directly located at a border area, which makes it a very thriving business center due to its nodal location. So the underlying issue is actually the chieftaincy. And you know, in Ghana, chieftaincy cannot stand by its own, and chieftaincy in itself is useless if you have no control over land.
Maxwell, you've been with the communities living through this conflict. Beyond the suffering, what coping strategies or resilience have you seen people adapt to keep their lives going?
So, not specifically limited to Bwaku, but in other conflict areas, well, the nature of Ghana is that people are receptive. So when there is this fight, they run to other places, and then they can get small piece of lands given them free to begin to farm. Then there's also people donating to them food items, clothing, and other items that can help them to survive. I visited a community on Friday which staged a protest after a perceived neglect by authority that they do not have, they do not get any solutions to their conflict. All their homes, about 200, 300 of them, were demolished in counterattacks by their rivals. So, and these people have not been attended to. Police are not there to ensure that people can farm. But then they have relatives where they can run to, where they think that this is what is better. Other husbands have moved to the down south to work as laborers and then be able to send food to their children.
Well, Prof, considering what Max is saying and from your research, which community-led peace-building efforts have worked in Ghana or the wider Sahel that could be scaled up in the north?
Yeah, in terms of Boko, there have been so many interventions, yes, from the government level, but they are all facilitated by the government. And talking about a community-led intervention, when the issue started, there was a group called the Boko Inter-Ethnic Dialogue, and they started making progress. And in fact, after some point, we thought the issue was resolved. Let me also indicate that the alignment of the two major ethnic groups to the two major political parties in Ghana, the NPP and the NDC, is actually what has been thwarting the peace efforts. And you hear Maxwell talking about the fact that now the government has to rely largely on the expertise of the Ashantihene, and the Ashantihene has got a record of resolving conflicts of this nature. Let's be reminded that he was the one that led mediation efforts to resolve the Dagbon chieftaincy conflict, which had raged on for so many years. So based on that record, the government now is relying on the Otunfuo-led mediation committee. And I have actually started working in it. And if you are talking about community-led, now in Boko itself, there's no confidence in any group emanating from Boko itself.
But Max, when you speak to the residents, what do they say would make them feel safer?
For some, they need just basic protection from the security part.
Mm.
Others are looking for mediators. So as we have in Boko, that matter has been referred to Otunfuo. But other places, there is nothing like that. It is the people themselves who are either showing, fighting among themselves, nobody is willing. But then the other smaller, organizations, NGOs who are attempting to put things together. But these people do not have the capacity, they don't wield the power to influence much. Just a little bit of a few people, they want to change their minds to get into building the peace process. But these are people, especially women. We had women demonstrating, resorting to traditional method, for like the use of leaves in their culture. When you're mm-hmm. walking and holding leaves, it means that you are denouncing conflict. And when they give it to you, and culturally, if you do not enforce peace as a chief or as somebody, and you go ahead to, promote conflict, they believe that their ancestors will come for you. So these were some of the things they are doing whilst calling on government to at least, invite them. Then they can mm-hmm. solve this issue once and for all. But for now, they are on their own.
Now, Prof, back to the confidence that you've just alluded to and lack of it. How can security agencies build that trust while still keeping the area secure, especially in such a sensitive context?
Yes, that's a very tricky question. And unfortunately, the security have been trying to do their best. And let's not forget the security come on behalf of government. It's at the behest of government, the security agencies, mainly the police and the military, sometimes supported by other intelligence networks. They are the ones working in the area. But in most conflict areas. But in the places where we have protracted conflicts such as Boko, I am afraid the security people appear to have managed themselves in such a way that they have almost lost the confidence of the key combatants, because people don't trust them. And evidence of that is where you have occasions where the combatants openly face off with the security, and sometimes leading even to the loss of lives among some of the security members. That should tell you how serious the mistrust has been. But of course, government owes them a duty to make sure that security and peace is instilled in the area. Let's not forget that peace and security are part of the dividends of democracy and good governance. Once a group of people vote for you, it behoves on you to make sure that the people live in peace, the people go about their activities with peace, so that once there is peace, there can be development, there can be interventions that will propose, that will promote the lives of the people. But in this particular case, there have been serious challenges. And that is why you see that right now, the security presence in those areas is just for them to manage and prevent the escalation of the conflict. But in terms of resolution, it is now, everybody now relies on the traditional rulers, especially the Ashanti. And let's be reminded, he's also one of the most important and most respected chief in Ghana's chieftaincy history. So when he speaks, they listen. And so we have observed from afar that the components, the various factions are cooperating, and everybody is hoping that he would deliver peace and security, he would deliver resolution as he did in the case of the Dagbon crisis.
And this leads me to speak about the porous borders. And Ghana borders Burkina Faso, Max, where extremist groups are active. What worries do people in North share with you about spillover or infiltration?
There have been many reports concerning the inflow of high caliber of weapons into this area, and possibly because it is a shared border to Burkina Faso, Togo, where the insurgency is ongoing. The access to such weapons is easy. And the second part is that there is perception that many times people are caught in the fight, and people are killed, and they can't identify the combatants, the perpetrators. So they are expected to be hired from across the border to come and be working. And so that sharing of, you know, dangerous skills in the way Ghanaian local conflicts are now becoming is keeping putting people in a very tense moment that, you know, jihadist infiltration or supporting people or people learning from them is quite high.
And Prof, how can Ghana strengthen its borders without making communities feel militarized? And what role should regional collaboration play in preventing radicalization?
Yeah, there has been efforts, not just by only Ghana, but there have also been efforts made by other civil society organizations and NGOs working in concert with government efforts to see how they can preempt the influx of extremists in the border areas. And like Maxwell mentioned, it's not only Boko. Ghana is also sharing borders with Togo and even Ivory Coast. And so all those borders, the sad thing about it is that all those borders are porous. Just that our concern right now, the border that poses the highest danger of our exposure to extremist elements is Burkina Faso. And so every eye is on the areas that are bordering. And it's not only Boko. There are places in Hamle. You know Hamle? There's also another border in Tumu, where it is only 18 miles. And Tumu is actually, by the way, Tumu is my hometown, so I know that place very well. It's only 18 miles into Burkina Faso. And so there are strict efforts. And right now, as I speak, there are military men all over the place. In Tumu, there's even now, in the last 3 years, the government has worked to establish a military station at that place, just so close to the border, to make sure they parade and ensure that there's peace in the area. And the other thing that we also have to do, and which I think government is doing, is to identify the vulnerable groups that probably are open to being militarized by insurgents. Just quite recently, there was a campaign of see something, say something. And that campaign caught up, which enabled people to quickly identify threats of infiltration, and those threats were quickly preempted. And therefore, if that posture is sustained, I think the government will be able to, as it were, prevent any attempts of terrorist infiltrations. And I think that they are also working hand in hand with the Burkinabe security forces, because terrorism is not only a threat to Ghana. And as you know, when they say that if your neighbor's beard is on fire, look for a bucket of water near you. Once the news about the presence of extremist elements lurking around the borders of the Burkina Faso area, the Ghanaian government, working in concert with other organizations, began taking preemptive measures by beginning this campaign of see something, say something, and that helped the security. And that is coordinated largely by the national security apparatus. So all the information, all the intelligence, and all the efforts to address this canker are largely coordinated by the national security, and the government is updated almost regularly on the situation in almost all the borders.
Max, Prof is talking about cooperations. Have you come across examples of such cooperations between locals and security forces through intelligence sharing or early warning that have helped reduce tensions?
Yes, of course, Okachi, whilst the military uses approaches including the kinetic approaches, the national security is also using the non-kinetic approaches, including the one he just mentioned, see something, say something. So you see that they work hand in hand. They are not the residents, are the ones that we see who is a stranger among them, who's suspicious, and they will not do anything down to alert the police or hand the person over to the security authority to investigate further. Those things are there. We have, there are cases of, excess. Maybe at the beginning, we were picking intelligence, or we're picking reports of how they were targeting wrong people. But along the line, it got streamlined. And then this actually helped a lot of communities, in keeping themselves safe. Beyond that, we had had NGOs also teaching communities what to do, how to, ensure that, how to investigate to ensure that these people are really suspect, or the people they are eyeing are really people who carry suspicion or who deserve to be feared. But then they're also teaching them how to send messages of messages to this particular term, I'm not sure I remember it correctly, but you have NGOs who are working in these borderlines to educate people about their safety and against terrorism. So those things are ongoing, and I think so far, especially in the past months, we have had successes, many of them, collaborating between the military and national security, and also with residents doing same.
Max, before I get to Prof to give us his closing remarks, despite all these challenges, what gives people in northern Ghana hope?
Well, we have Ghana has always pride as a peaceful country, and then we are hope. We also perceive, many people perceive themselves as, resilient in terms of peace. So the hope is that our unity is far more than the things that divide us. So people are hoping and looking to the fact that irrespective of the hatred in the system, irrespective of the conflict in the system, they are hopeful that there will be solutions one day.
Okay.
Then they work, they are only urging the government to do its part by being fair, by being proactive, by being, right in its, dealings, in its approaches to matters that can, divide the people. Apart from that, I know that maybe there is hope, and the people are really hoping that there will be solutions as they go on.
And Prof, If you had to highlight the top priorities Ghana must act on now to stabilize the North, what would they be?
Number one is to take strategic steps to curb the influx and circulation of small arms, which are currently in the hands of the wrong people. And what gives hope with reference to that is the appointment of a unit that is actually working to identify wherever these arms are and take steps to retrieve those arms. That's one. What also gives Ghanaians hope, apart from the fact that Ghana has been known to be a very to have scored high marks in terms of their ability to maintain security, in terms of even their role in global security, is also the fact that anytime there's an issue, anytime there's a reported incident in any of those areas, the rapidity with which the government responds to such situations is what gives a lot of people hope and courage. And again, Ghanaians are known to be people who are peace-loving. And it is for that reason you have all manner of immigrants. I don't want to call them refugees. There are a lot of immigrants all over the place. But Ghanaians are peace-loving. Ghanaians are hospitable. And so with the smallest or slightest effort to maintain peace, I believe that we will succeed.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
What we've heard from Maxwell and Professor Longhi paints a complex picture, one of danger, yes, but also of determination. Northern Ghana faces deep-rooted rivalries, economic hardships, and external threats. But it's also home to grassroots peace builders, vigilant communities, and citizens calling for better governance. The real test for Ghana is whether these seeds of peace can grow into a stronger enough shield against conflict and infiltration. The stakes are high, not just for the North, but for the stability of the entire country. We want to hear from you. Do you believe that Ghana can find lasting solution to northern insecurity, or are these conflicts too deeply entrenched? Join the conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa. You can also follow us on Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe and follow DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is George Okachi, and thank you for joining me on Africa Link, where we bring you the stories that matter.
DW, made for minds.